Match Boy. Overlooking Phoenix. From high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios. Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, where two cops talk to the community. I'm retired Crime Stopper Sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix Police Officer Jason Schechterly.
And buddy, we have another great guest. We really do. I was so excited when I saw Cop Shock. It's a really cool book. It talks about PTSD. It goes into detail. And he has a relationship with the LA cops. He has a relationship with the Sheriff's Department out here. We delved into a lot of trauma dealing with the police. But as you know, we had a lot of violence here last week in Phoenix. We had the cop that was shot 8 times, Taylor.
Yes.
We had 9 cops that were either injured or 8 cops injured. 5 were literally shot.
During record-setting.
Record-setting.
Never happened.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen a lot of violence. And so I'm really excited to get his take because without my knowledge at first, I realized that our guest, Alan Cates, is a media expert, having been a producer in LA. He's part of a lot of different things. So without further ado, I want to introduce Alan Cates to our show, the author of Cop Shock.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. The honor is all ours. I want to kind of get fast and furious into this. I want to play a video when the shooting occurred here in Phoenix, 9 officers were injured. You know, there's some talk about there's 4 of them that were received shrapnel of some kind. 5 were truly shot horrifically. It was a horrible day in the valley here with that many officers shot. But I did some sound on a local radio station and talked about how my belief, and you'll see this on the video, is this is kind of cause and effect from the hall pass that was given to a lot of criminals and a lot of violence during the 2020 riot. So listen in on the backside, please comment.
All of this coming after a very violent week for law enforcement. Jason Berry is live outside Phoenix Police Headquarters where, Jason, for officers, this is very personal.
Yeah, more and more officers are finding themselves in the line of fire, and that's making their jobs more difficult and more dangerous.
Their job is to protect the public, but being a police officer these days is more dangerous than ever. The wild shootout that sent 9 Phoenix police officers to the hospital Friday is just the latest example of a brazen criminal not hesitating to take shots at cops.
When they get to a point where they feel there's no out, instead of suicide by cop, it's execute a cop.
Darren Birch is a retired Phoenix police sergeant who spent 29 years on the force. He believes the violent riots in the summer of 2020 that led to hundreds of injured officers nationwide created an anti-police culture that has a lot of criminals feeling it's okay to attack officers, it's okay to resist arrest.
That's what we're dealing with, is truly monsters in our community that hate police and have been encouraged, literally encouraged, to go against police.
Just this week, there have been several attacks on officers. On Monday, a man reportedly stabbed a woman, then walked towards police with a knife. He was shot and killed. On Tuesday, a man in Mesa pointed what looked like a handgun at officers after a dispute with his parents. On Wednesday, Yavapai Apache Police Sergeant Preston Brogdon was shot near Camp Verde by a man who jumped out of his car and opened fire. He remains in the hospital in critical but stable condition.
Good-hearted, family man.
Brogdon's police chief Nathan Hubersee says it's unsettling to see so many officers in the line of fire, especially one of his own.
It's very disturbing, very frustrating, and very, it makes me upset, yes. It's tough. It's a tough situation all the way around. Thankfully, thank the God that he's still with us.
Back in December, Phoenix police officer Tyler Moldovan was ambushed at an apartment complex and shot 8 times. Amazingly, he survived and was just released from the hospital to begin rehab.
Without a doubt, without a hesitation, not even a second hesitation, it's so much more dangerous now than anything I ever saw in my almost 30 years. It is absolutely far, far more dangerous.
The latest update we have on that Yavapai Apache police officer is he had another surgery today, and all indications are it went well. Nicole, every one of these cases is one too many.
So having heard that, what's your take on, first of all, am I completely, you know, wet and way off base? Do you think there's some truth to what I'm saying? And what is your take on the media's role during the 2020? I want to kind of look back, if you will, to 2 years ago and kind of look at that time frame and how the media covered it, opposed to maybe today and how they're covering violence against police today.
I've been a journalist for 50 years. I was just counting in my head. That long. You know, I have never seen anything like this. When I read about the 9 officers who were shot, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. I had to watch it over and over again. It's like, no, somebody's playing a prank. This can't be true. Because when I grew up, we always grew up to respect police officers and to cherish them. And the neighborhood would cherish them. I first became interested in police in the mid-1970s when I met 2 cops outside my house, and they said, they're looking for a place to stage something. I said, how about my house? From that point on, for the next several years, there was a police car in front of my house at least 3 times a week, and police came and went. My house is like a substation for police officers. And they allowed me to sit in on their briefings, and I would see how they would stage a bust that they were going to make, from drugs to robberies to everything you could imagine. And there was a great deal of respect. The community at large, my neighbors loved me for this. They said they couldn't believe a crime rate went to 0. And they were frequently talking to the cops. We created a neighborhood watch. Those were the glory times. And now I look at it, especially during 2020, it's like, what's going on here? Why did this happen?
And that's why I kind of, with the tease, I kind of talked about this insanity, and I use the radio code, and it's just a tease, but it kind of brings home the insanity that we saw in 2020 and with the defunding of the police and all that incredible rhetoric. I want to let's look at a couple of headlines that are just recent. Every one of these headlines was during a 24-hour time period. We're talking about, of course, the attack to the officers. And keep in mind, that attack, as it delves with the 8 officers that are injured or 9 officers injured and the 5 that were shot, the suspect used a baby, as I believe, as bait to execute officers. That's what I took it as. I really did. Sometimes you'll see these human shield scenarios, but that was absolutely using a baby as bait, because it wasn't until the officers approached to rescue this baby that he opened fire. Well, take that back. He actually fired earlier, so we knew there was a threat inside. But at that point, he said, you know, Ali Ali, oxen free, you know, I won't shoot anymore. If you will, verbally gave up the fight, if you will. But then you look at out of Boston, they had a knife-wielding man killed by police in Lexington. You had the Tribune put out a headline, man dead after exchange of gunfire with Eden Valley Police. Minnesota put out a headline out of their local Channel 4, police in Meeker County report fatal officer-involved shooting. You had all these headlines were in one 24-hour time period, to include, of course, like I said, the shooting in Phoenix. So when I think about this violence, I can't help but think about what's going to happen to these officers. You know, like I had a 30-year career. Out of 30 years, I got shot at 3 times. So if you will, one decade. The amount of violence that's occurring now is so much more than anything I saw. And Jason, you?
No, I've never seen anything like what's going on. Nobody has.
Yeah.
The violence right now, not only against police officers, but against each other as human beings, is unprecedented.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about your expertise as the author of Cop Shock, which I love your book, and thank you for bringing it in.
Thank you.
Yeah, it definitely made the place look really classy. tell me about what you think when the dust settles and the cops are dealing with this mayhem, this violence, when the dust settles and we start going, hopefully, to some type of normalcy in the world in terms of violence against police officers, because we know it's an inherently dangerous job. But it seems like there's truly a war on police right now. And that's, again, for me, I want to know what you think in terms of whether you think there's a war on police, and also what type of toll is this going to take on our men and women down the road?
Before what you're calling the war on police, which I absolutely believe because I've been looking at it, especially the ambushes, police officers sitting in a car, filling out reports or waiting for something, somebody just goes out and shoots him. And this is happening over and over again across the country. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Because these officers are there to protect them. But I think there is a bit of a backlash now. Finally, it's starting. But from 2020 on, what we've been observing is a level of violence that is extraordinary for this country. As far as PTSD, before this kind of war on police, it was difficult. About a third of police officers would develop post-traumatic stress disorder. But now, I can't imagine what that must be like. I know I've talked to police officers and would-be police officers who are looking into,
future.
I want to be a cop. And say, oh, no, you know what? Forget it. I don't want this. I'll go work for Wall Street, for God's sakes. At least they won't try to kill me.
Yeah, I used to talk about it being a thankless job. But when it's a thankless, spit in your face, try to kill you, and having everyone demonize you job, it's insane. And again, that's why I kind of threw out that tease. It's just an insanity. And so I really worry about the officers, the men and women today, but I worry about them 5 years from now when all this, you know, when the, if you will, when the dust settles. I keep kind of referring to that. Because we look back, one more thing I want to ask. When I did that video with local news station here, I kind of talked about, and this, you know how that goes when you do a show like this, they'll maybe use a fraction of what you say.
Yeah.
So I talked about how there was thousands of officers that were injured during the 2020 riots. And during the piece that you heard, they referred to as 100 or a couple of hundred officers that were injured during the 2020 riots. And it's like, no, there was hundreds of officers injured just in Portland. There was hundreds of officers injured just in Seattle. Over the course of the country, thousands. The Police Chief Association released the numbers officially because the FBI won't do it. And they said there was over 2,000 officers injured in just the first weeks of that horrible rioting that occurred in the summer of 2020. So I'm curious about from your media expertise, why is there a need to, if you will, underreport and minimize things? Is this intentional? Is it a liability? Because I get why they'll say things like the alleged this person and alleged that person. I get that. It's all about legalities. But when we know for a fact thousands of officers have been injured in the first weeks, when we know the hold your hand up and, you know, I surrender, the whole Michael Brown thing supposedly Ferguson, I believe it was.
Yeah, Ferguson, Missouri. Yeah.
When that occurred, the co-defendant, the suspect, you know, said, oh, he was giving up. He was saying, my hands are up. That was a complete lie. And we know it was a lie. It was found to be a lie. But the media, to my opinion, never did a good enough job to fix their fault. They had put out that narrative. Excuse me, not narrative. They had put out that report because they interviewed that young man who was, again, part of the crime of the robbery. So he lied. But there are still people today. I went on Google and looked up, and there's people still today that use that saying, if you will, in terms of, you know, I give up, hands are up.
I think what I've been saying is, I mean, when I was a journalist for so many years, and the thought in my mind was always investigate, get it right. Is it true? Now it's entertainment. It's a very different mindset. So when a guy puts his hands up, although he is a fraud in doing it, the journalist is not going to say, is this really true? What's happening? Instead, they're saying, hey, this is great entertainment. I'm going to get more viewers looking at this guy putting his hands up. And now look at the police. They're advancing on him. So let's cut out the part before, and we'll just go with that part.
Yeah.
This is where we are now. We have news as entertainment.
Do you think the media is doing a better job post-2020? And again, Jason and I have talked about this a lot. During the riots, we would see a lot of news coverage that use the same exact verbiage of "is peaceful for the most part," end quote. It was always that way. And as an investigator, I would use verbiage as an investigative signature to show that a crime is linked, because people don't use the same exact verbiage unless they're involved, because they're creatures of habit. So for all these varied journalists, they use the same verbiage over and over and over, told me that there was, to me, that there was some type of edict coming down to say this and say this, an actual putting in writing. Am I going off the deep end here, conspiracy thing, or is that a possibility that there would be some kind of memo coming down to the various journalists, like, you know, because I get it. There was only 7% of the protests were violent, but when there is 9,000 protests and 7% are violent, then that's like 600 violent riots. So it's still a lot. It's a small percentage, but there's so many. To me, I just keep thinking the media underreported, and that's where the term false, you know, false media came to play.
Okay. I'm not sure about the conspiracy part, but there is something else that's going on there, because we live in the age of the internet. And I think that journalists are thinking, how many hits am I going to get on the internet so I can keep my job and keep doing this? Wow. So you've got entertainment, you tie the hits on, and it's like, okay, what do I have to do to get the hits? Because it's very competitive being a journalist now, because a lot of them have been fired. So there are very few who are actually working. And so they're saying, I want to keep my place, so I'm going to get the hits. And how do I do that? I entertain instead of investigate. At the same time, I'm finding lately, the past few months, that there has been a bit of a shift into doing more investigative work. But at the same time, you've got to look at this other stuff. I would say most journalists are thinking, how many hits can I get on the internet? How famous can I be? A journalist has never thought that before. They never thought, oh, I want to be famous. Because, okay, I'm a journalist now, and soon I'm going to be a spokesperson.
Yeah, and I like what you talked about. Journalists don't make a lot of money. The talking heads make the money, the newscasters.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Where the money is. The journalists are always going from one market to the next based on trying to, you know, a bigger market. And I know you understand what I'm saying when I talk about markets. But I can't help but think that, and I've talked with Jason about this, and about a paradigm shift that's going on. And I think things are getting better. I really do. When you have various politicians, and again, I don't care about left or right, red or blue, but when they start talking about, bless our men and women who are falling and dying for us, and they're saying this when 2.5 years ago, they're saying defund. So do you think that is also, or am I, again, way out of bounds here? And do you think there is a return of normalcy in terms of this rhetoric about defunding police, demonizing police, dismantling police departments, and so forth? Do you think that's no longer what the media is even hoping for, and they're wanting to kind of get back to normal?
I think the concept of defund the police has run its course.
Oh,
finally, thank God. Because I remember when it first came out, I thought, well, defund the police? Are you out of your minds?
Is that a joke?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Is this some kind of a prank? And then I was reading about some departments who are actually considering it. But the whole idea of it is ridiculous. But look at it in the bigger scope of things, which is, this is extremely disrespectful to police officers. They never have enough funds to do the work that they're doing. And so you say, defund the police? That's insane.
Yeah, when I look at a business model, if a business is having some type of internal problems, you don't say, well, we're going to stop the training, we're going to take money away, we're going to, you know, no, that doesn't fix a problem, if there is a problem. If that's your narrative, that there's a problem, then why would you want to take money away from it when we need to fix it? It never made sense to me. I want to kind of tag into what we talked about in the beginning of the show, a little bit about your book and what got you to write this book. Talk a little bit about PTSD. Before the show started, I kind of shared my thoughts. I always refer to it as PTSI, even though there is PTSD. Some is based on injury of your job, and others is based on life and what life throws at you. And you know, perfect example is sitting right here. Jason, you know, would experience PTSI based on the horrific crash that occurred on duty by a person that shouldn't have been driving. Mine was based on the loss of a child, which is a private matter, you know. So in your book, do you kind of differentiate those two worlds, or am I, again,
I don't in the book, but I have in my seminars, as well as conducting seminars for police, I've also conducted them for the military. And that was a real shocker, because the real big concept there is not post-traumatic stress disorder, but post-traumatic stress injury. And I would emphasize that in the seminars, and I was shut down. Because the heads in the military said, oh, no, we don't want that. We're not going to call it an injury. And I said, but based on what I've been reading, you don't like PTSD, but post-traumatic stress disorder actually is an injury. It's just like a physical injury. There's very little trauma. Difference between that and a mental injury.
Yeah.
But they didn't like it, which really surprised me, because I think there should be a shift. And the American Psychiatric Association should change their designation. Instead of PTSD, it should be PTSI.
I could not agree more.
Why do people have a preference over whether it's a disorder versus an injury? Is it just still the stigma from the same way we treated kids with mental...
I think it's because the idea of a disorder says there's something wrong with you.
And I think liability.
By the way, let me just point out one thing. I did 6 years of research before I put this book out. And PTSD is a normal response to being in a situation that you can't escape. And you put police officers in that, you can see, well, there's a good chance. Yeah. You know, and about a third of police officers do develop post-traumatic stress disorder. But it's the idea of a disorder, which is firmly within the psychiatric community, that concept. And that's why a lot of police, a lot of military wanted to move that into the area of injury.
Well, I wonder
where it should be.
I wonder if, and you talk about management opposed to the rank and file.
Yeah.
If the management is looking at liability, they're looking at costs, they're looking at insurance, they're looking at a different functionality, unfortunately, sometimes than than you and I, who care about the troops, they care about the men and women, and I don't care what you call it, but calling it an injury is more consistent with how it occurred on duty. It's an injury based on your duty. So I wonder if sometimes that comes into play.
I think you're exactly onto the right thing, because I've been involved in some court cases supporting police officers, and it's very hard to get a disability based on PTSD. So you move that into injury, and suddenly it's easy.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's duty related.
Cities, departments don't want that, because that means they're going to be paying out for more disability pensions. And these are pensions that have been earned.
Thank you.
But that's not how cities and the higher ups in the police departments look at it. I've been called by police officers who have PTSD, and they said, I'm having difficulty with the department, and what do you think I can do? I said, they're going to give you a hard time no matter what you try to do.
It's about the money.
It's always about the money. Yeah. The bottom line is money for them. So start thinking that way.
I thank you for what you've done in this world, helping men and women. Many times it's another retired officer. So it's really great from a mind like yours, from all the different things you've experienced, your education, medical, and so forth. You're expert in this trauma. Can you tell me why you wrote the book, and what the catalyst was to write this book and try to help the men and women in law enforcement? Because like I said, many times it's a retiree who comes forward and says, I need to do something. So I really applaud you for being in the civilian sector, if you will, and coming to our rescue.
Well, thank you. It was very odd how the book began. As I mentioned to you, I've been involved with police officers since the mid-70s. So I had a real respect for them and a real understanding, because they included me in the work that they did. And around 1993, I woke up one morning, and I don't know where this thought came from. I just thought, Vietnam veterans get PTSD. I wonder if cops do. I phoned the LAPD, talked to the head of their counseling unit, and he said, absolutely, they do. And why don't you come down and talk to us? That's how it started.
Wow.
With the LAPD, I spent an entire day, and I interviewed police officers with PTSD. And from there, I started branching out into smaller departments. I went to New York. I spent 2 weeks in New York interviewing police officers. That whole thing was a trip onto itself. The Patrolman's Benevolent Association gave me an office because they said cops are not going to be interviewed in their department. Forget it. So the police officers would come to the PBA office.
Yeah.
And that was a real eye-opener.
For officers listening to this show right now, or the loved ones, because many times it's the loved ones that see the signs, tell us how we can get this book and where it's available at.
You can order it through bookstores. You can order it on its website, which is www.copshock.com. It's one word. And we'd be happy to send them to you.
And do you still do lectures? Do you still do seminars? Or was that, years ago?
No, it's still going on. As a matter of fact, next month there is going to be a first responders conference in Scottsdale. And I'm going to be speaking at that conference.
Fantastic.
And the month after that, I'll be giving a seminar in Santa Barbara for first responders. So it's branching out from, so you're going to have police officers and firefighters and, emergency room nurses, doctors, people like that.
Yeah, all these first responders, it's not just cops. Unfortunately, what we've seen with police has been horrific of late. It's a great book. I'm starting reading it. I won't lie, I'm not, through yet, so I'm really enjoying the read. It's weighted down so people as stupid as me can read it. So anyone can read this book. It's a really good book. I can't thank you enough for being on Badge Boys.
It's my pleasure for being here. Thank you, sir, for inviting me.
And we'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this. If you like the Badge Boys, you'll love their books, starting with Burning Shield, the Jason Schechterle story, which Arizona Diamondbacks president Derek Hall proclaimed, "Jason is an inspiration and his story must be read and shared." The professionally written novel is a powerful biography chronicling Jason's gut-wrenching battle to health after being trapped in a fireball that consumed his police car, and his high-stakes legal showdown against the Ford Motor Company for their explodingly lethal Crown Victoria police cruisers. Then there's Darren's award-winning Twisted But True book trilogy, with close to 100 compelling and funny true crime stories that American detectives with Lieutenant Joe Kenda producer called the perfect blend of humor, heroism, and honor. And retired Colonel Dave Grossman declared, "Darren's Twisted But True books are hilarious, deep, and powerful." Each book in the series received the Pinnacle Award for the best true crime book, and a story from book two was featured on an ID Channel television show. And Robin's most recent book, Soul Stirrings, reviewed as an often humorous and spiritually uplifting story of a widow's soul-searching pilgrimage to the afterlife. Darren called it a love story, a ghost story, an investigative story. It's a story like no other. And Robin's first book, Victim No More, where she shares her harrowing experiences with rape and domestic violence as Robin takes the reader on a very personal journey through the morass of abuse and loss, and ultimately, survival. These Badge Boy books should be on everybody's top 10 reading list. You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterle. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. Darren, another great episode with Alan. It's a topic that can never get discussed enough.
Thank you.
And at some point, I hope we're talking about it's starting to come to light more than he mentioned that he had this love of police officers or gravitated toward them in the 70s. And, this is something that was not talked about, PTSD, PTSI. And also, I think it wasn't prevalent in the sense that you didn't have the suicides back then that you do now. You didn't have the domestic violence. You didn't have the people quitting. So it's odd that 50 years later, first responders are feeling it more. So there's going to have to be a shift from just talking about it to trying to prevent it on the front end. Like, listen, you choose to get into this job, and it is a choice. Nobody's forcing you. If you choose to get into this job, then you have to take care of yourself on the front end, mentally, emotionally, and physically, and be prepared for when these situations arise over a 20 or 30 year career that will result in that. So the book is fantastic, and that was a great conversation. So as always, every week something happens.
It does.
That it's never ending. It amazes me. Every week we are going to have a hot topic that is usually going to get me pretty upset. This one, this week, is certainly no different. And I knew you have a couple. Which one would you like to discuss first?
I do. And before I jump into that, I just want to say to the listening audience, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that we are now on TV. We're going to be on the FRN network, Axon, in May. This is almost like a Easter egg, if you will, in terms of the of the content, because this part that we're talking about will not be on that TV show. So you get to hear Jason, as always, talking about the cop talk and his thoughts about these various headlines. And we also have with us an esteemed guest who wrote Cop Shock. He has helped out with PTSD. So I throw these headlines to both of you. So this is, oh my gosh, woman found dead. This is the headline. Woman found dead in Manhattan apartment after being followed home. Police say this was the reporting was from CNN, by the way. A 25-year-old man has been charged with murder after he allegedly followed a woman to her New York apartment and stabbed her dozens of times with a knife. Surveillance video from the entrance of the apartment shows Christina Yuna, unfortunately 35, entering the building around 4 o'clock in the morning. A man pushes the door open as it's closed behind her and follows her inside. The man, identified by investigators as Osmad Nash, allegedly followed Lee up to the sixth floor of the walking apartment while remaining about a flight of stairs below her, so kind of stalking her, if you will. According to video evidence describing the complaint, when Lee reached the apartment and entered, the man then pushed his way inside. Horrible, horrible crime, but it's even more horrible because of who this guy was and where he should not have been. What's your thoughts?
So many thoughts on this. First of all, going back to our first segment, we talk about the media. The only reason we know about this crime here in Arizona, you know, whether you're in Arizona, you're in Montana, you're in Texas, it doesn't matter. The only reason we know about this horrific murder is because we have to tune into a news outlet, a media station, right? Well, correct. The media has this narrative right now. And, you know, I agree with certain things Alan was saying, but you talk about a journalist, they have a boss, they have a boss, they have a boss, and it comes down to right now, there is a narrative. And the only reason that the narrative has sort of shifted in the past 2 weeks is because it's an election year. There's no sincerity behind it. Defund the police doesn't work, and anybody with a half ounce of common sense knows that. But if the people who believe in defund the police win all the elections next November, then defund the police is going to pick up steam again. It is insincere on all counts. It's just the what's on the calendar. Then you have the issue of all they wanted to talk about starting in 2020, the media, the educators in this country, the politicians. The only thing that they want to talk about is race, and they want to divide our country. However, when you hear about a case like this, we don't hear about the race unless you look into it. That's not something that gets talked about. The woman, the murder victim is Asian. The suspect is black. There was a woman thrown in front of a commuter. The subway.
They had a rash of those in New York.
An Asian woman.
Yeah.
There is a serious heightened violence against Asians right now and against Jewish people in America, but the media isn't going to talk about that. They are only going to stick to one thing when it comes to race, and that is when a white cop hurts a black person. But what we're talking about here is human life. And it is really starting to weigh heavy on me when you listen to the news, when you listen to people talking about a case like this. We are starting to become so desensitized to murder and the loss of life. This woman was stabbed. The violence, can you imagine being stabbed?
No,
Darren, as you sit here right now, can you even
cut on duty, but not stabbed multiple times,
followed into your own home, stabbed, left for dead, and have to be discovered later? We don't talk about the horrificness of this, and it is happening every single day. The suspect, who should never have been on the street.
That's the thing that bothers me.
This is where it goes back to, and it's easy to talk about New York. Now, New York has this new district attorney who
Manhattan.
who absolutely openly disrespects victims and loves criminals and 4th, 5th, 10th, 20th chances. Armed robbery in New York City.
Misdemeanor.
I'm going to point a gun at you and steal your wallet because all I'm getting is a ticket.
A ticket.
Oh, my God. But he hasn't been there that long. The guy who murdered this woman has been there a long time. And the police, if you look at his entire, what we call the old school rap sheet, if you look at that rap sheet, the police did their job every single time. It is prosecutors, it is politicians, and it is judges who refuse to remove the violent offenders in our society so that the rest of us who are trying to live our lives in a good way, go to work, take care of our families, and live a good life. We are our most basic human right and the most basic responsibility of our politicians is to keep us
public
safe.
Safety. Public
and they
safety.
Openly refuse to do it. So here now you have another murder victim who was stabbed. And as soon as you hear about it, the very next news segment is, tomorrow's weather is going to be this. Or there was a minor car accident on the George Washington Bridge. And then tomorrow there will be another violent murder and another violent murder. And it's just going to get talked about in a way that it's no big deal. Murder is a big deal. So what the hell is going on?
I'm going to transfer to you, Alan, in regards to the media on this case. I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I love doing that because there's always two sides of every story sort of thing. I think that the media if they report it, it's like, okay, you're only reporting because it's sensational. You're exploiting the victim. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, if they don't report it, then, it's, more agenda-driven non-news. In other words, you're omitting things that don't play to your – they can't win is, I guess, what I'm saying in terms of a story like this because it needs to be told. It needs to be out there. As far as your trauma hat for police officers, I'd like you to kind of put on your media hat in terms of the media on this. Are we not hearing enough or are we hearing too much? Are they exploiting it or are they not reporting it?
It's the focus that's the problem. The focus should be on the murders. And you don't just go to the weather right after. That just bugs me so much. I mean, they're reporting a horrific murder, and next they're talking about the weather, or they go to a commercial about something totally stupid. It's like, wait a minute, can we just take a minute here, and recognize this is a human being who lost her life? And also, what are the repercussions through the family, the community at large, the entire country, every time somebody loses their life? I mean, that's extraordinary. Okay, so now I'm a journalist. Here is what my job is when I'm working for a TV station, and I have done that, which is, okay, there's my story. I did my story. You know what happens? I'm on to the next, and then the next, and the next. I don't have time to be that sensitive.
Yeah.
And
it's
then
like a cop.
When you look at police officers, what do cops do? They go from job
call
to job
to
call. Job.
Yeah.
They have to solve
totally
whatever they can.
We call cop mode.
Yeah, they are not social workers.
Right.
And I think police have been put into that role of social work.
Yeah, anytime there's a new law, the legislators immediately say, well, we can just have the police do it. Like they don't have enough on their hands already.
Yeah.
The next headline I'm going to read, crime spikes. Force schools to reinstate or reinitiate the resource officers in complete contradiction of the defunding movement. So they have this defund movement. There are schools now that have reinstated their school resource officers after having fired them. I think this goes to what you and I, Alan, were talking about in regards to this paradigm shift. And I really believe it's at play. Yes or no? I mean, it's arguable because Jason's like,
is there anything I disagree on more?
Right,
this it paradigm is. Shift? I still think we are walking toward the edge of a cliff, and you think we are already coming back out of it. And
we're skipping around the corner.
Listen, I want to believe in you. I want your positivity.
Right.
I just don't think we are
you
anywhere
don't see
close
it.
To
so. So this goes to you first, and then Alan, Jason, with them reinstating these officers, clearly, if you will, admitting that they made a mistake and that the funding was stupid. Right. But the fact that they're doing it, I think, is telling because they could try to be quiet and hire private security, but they're hiring these police officers back. Do you think that's a good sign to the point that Alan made earlier, which is the defunding movement is not only gone, it's dead in the water?
Well, I do think it's a good sign that they are bringing back a unit such as school resource officers. I think it's a good thing that the new mayor in New York City, Eric Adams, reinstituted a unit that was very important to stopping crimes that Mayor de Blasio got rid of. You are seeing a few things. I think it's more telling, though, on the side of you have, you know, especially in the younger generations, very much in our education system right now, on up to the school boards and then even above them, that's where some of the worst rhetoric has come from in the past couple of years toward police officers. So you have people with loud voices and support on places like Twitter and Facebook. And as I've said before, there is nobody in this country more responsible for death and human trafficking and rape and assault than Mark Zuckerberg. Nobody. He is number one, the most vile person in America, causing the most harm. That's what the young generation is on. But when they got rid of school resource officers, then guess what happens? Violence and crime, because unfortunately, there are just bad people in this world, and they have to be removed from society. There has to be prevention. So while you listen to all these educators or young people jump on their Instagrams and video themselves in tears going, I am shook, I am triggered at the sight of a racist cop in uniform, well, then all of a sudden when they get assaulted or their car gets broken into or their school books get stolen, then it's like, well, hold on. Because, again, all the people making these decisions and changes, they're safe, Darren. They have nothing to worry about. All these politicians have the private security. People like LeBron James, I guarantee you right now, surrounding him is six former police officers protecting him. And yet he would walk in this room right now and tell you that me and you are racist pieces of shit. It's unfathomable, the broken dialogue in this country. But to answer your question directly, it is a good sign that SROs are coming back, because children deserve to go to school and be safe.
God bless you. Absolutely.
To go back to yes. defund the police again, because yes. I'm thinking, okay, so what is the overall effect of that? And what it did is it put police officers and their families on the defensive. It distracted from what a police officer's life is like. What is it like on the street? Who do they come in contact with? How do they handle that? And what the conversation should have been is, well, how do we help them handle it?
Right.
For one thing, they always have had few resources. And to say, okay, now we're going to defund them, it's like, wait a minute, you can't do that. I mean, we need more resources.
Exactly. It was insane. And to the T's that we brought in, that insanity, it goes everywhere. You know, now you got criminals seeing this, and the jail reform. We haven't even mentioned jail reform, and that's a whole another show as far as these people that are just being let out. It's not about reform. It's about insanity. It's about criminal empowerment. And I think we're going in the right path. But to Jason's point, it's a big ship. And you can't turn it on a dime, so it's going to take time. There's already so much damage that has been incurred, based on the 2020 riots and the lack of consequences to those criminals therein. Great Cop Talk segment, and we are going to be right back with our last Looney Laws, Heroic Headlines, and my favorite, Jason's Inspirational Close. So we'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
During these challenging days, we not only need to remember our many fallen heroes for their ultimate sacrifice, but also honor them so their families know we've not forgotten. And that's what the Arizona Fallen Hero Memorial Riders Organization is all about. Each year, the nonprofit organizes three memorial rides among the beautiful backdrop of North, South, and Central Arizona, with the proceeds going to the 100 Club of Arizona. Learn more about these fun rides and how you can honor all of Arizona's fallen heroes at ArizonaFallenHeroesMemorialRiders.org.
You're
listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. All right, Darren, one of our favorite, well, I think
it's my favorite.
Every segment seems
I know,
to be our
right?
favorite. And they're always great. So I hate, we got to stop using that word after 3 years.
why?
We keep setting the bar higher and higher. It's always our favorite. But I definitely love a little break in the seriousness because I get pretty wound up in cop talk, as you can see. But you will enlighten me with some goofy laws around this world, and I would love to hear this week's.
Yeah, I love how Alan is here. I'm going to talk to you about the trauma. I'm here to do the when Jason gets all wound up, and he does, bless his heart. Again, Jason is the heart of the show. I'm the bowels of the show. Yes. So looting laws around the world. Some of these laws may seem absolutely ridiculous, while others may be based on cultural differences. But they are all hard to believe. And since they are all true, it's best that you know the looting laws around the world before you travel to some far-off distant land and discover you violated the law by driving a dirty car or wearing lacy undies in Russia. Yeah, it's true. It is absolutely 100% true.
Lacy undies in Russia?
Yeah, it's completely against the law.
Is that the only thing you have on?
There's so many things that are illegal, right? Uh-huh. But why would it be lacy underwear? I don't get it. And it's not only...
How would they know?
Well, I'm going to get to there. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I have a... I know
is
exactly.
Is Winnie the Pooh story?
It's going to even beat Winnie the Pooh. Sorry, ladies and gents, but yes, Russia has outlawed lacy panties. A 2014 law in Russia and other Russian-dominated countries has outlawed lacy undergarments. And here is a news broadcast to that point.
Local news in Kazakhstan reporting on a woman being detained for demanding the right to wear lace knickers. Why are you afraid of panties? She shouts. Freedom to panties as she's forced into a police van. It's a new law that's set to come into effect not only in Kazakhstan but in Russia and Belarus on the 1st of July. It will outlaw any underwear containing less than 6% of cotton from being imported, made or sold in the three countries, which are under the customs union led by Russia. Women can still buy them when they go abroad.
Just now, gorgeous underwear from foreign brands has become available in Russia's free market. If you take that away again, the buyer is going to be the one who suffers the most.
Amid consumer outrage, customs union officials said they were preparing to issue a statement soon. But for many, it's yet another example of the misguided economic policies that have become a trademark of many post-Soviet countries. Marie Koi, BBC News.
Yeah, that's bizarre. A news broadcast. They claim the law was enacted for health and safety reasons, though I'm not sure how in the world really, undies are either unhealthy or dangerous, as you heard in that newscast. But the real question, which is what Jason brought up, is how would they even know? There's no way they could know, right? But maybe they do because they have a crack panty squad of Russian cops. So move over, KGB, because there's a new Russian PPPPD, the Pretty Panty Preventing Police Department. And that's how they know.
You're serious about that?
No, I am totally joking.
Wow.
And lastly, it is illegal to drive a dirty car in Russia. Russian government doesn't just care about your undies. They also care about your dirty cars. There is a law that prohibits driving a dirty car. It's illegal to have a dirty car. You know the thing where you say, wash me, yeah. As a joke?
No, yeah. I kind of like this law, though.
See, I don't because I drive dirty cars.
Oh.
Yeah. So, again, we love each other.
I like things clean. So
we're so different in so many ways.
I go to the car wash like every 3 days.
I'm horrible. I have a dirty car. That's why I think we were called pigs. Someone saw me and said,
I saw
yeah,
your car.
It's all my fault. All my fault. We're not sure exactly what level of dirt is permitted or how often the law is actually enforced, but the fact that if they're willing to arrest somebody for lacy unders, what are they going to do with a dirty car? And that is the loony laws around the world.
We'll be right back.
This heroic headline definitely going to come right here in our hometown of Phoenix, Arizona, February 11th, last Friday, early in the morning, 2:45. And this statement that I'm going to read, obviously you and I both know a lot of the details about what happened that
yes.
are not for sharing
public
right now
and
in public
correct.
Consumption right now. But I'm going to read this statement that it definitely sums up the heroism. It does come from our city manager, Jeff Burton, who is great. His words are great. But as I read this and you think about the complexity, the severity, and the trauma that took place on this one call, again, it was record-setting. And I wonder, but even though I said city manager, keep in mind the Phoenix police officers involved in this, they do this with a tremendous lack of support from our – we have one of the worst city councils in the entire country.
And it's
our
very divided. It's
our
very
mayor
divided.
Is horrible, but the city council is really – they. What is my thing every week? Leave the day better than you found it.
Correct.
These individuals go to work every day actively determined to leave the city and the day worse than they found it. I don't know how you want to live life like that, but they're all right here in Phoenix on our city council. It's pretty awesome. Jeff Burton said, I'm writing with mixed emotions this morning. Along with the rest of you, I feel the weight of nine Phoenix police officers shot or injured during a standoff the morning of February 11th. At this time, I feel so proud of our officers who acted with bravery to save the life of an infant. The first officer was shot as he responded to the call. It was near 54th Avenue in Lower Buckeye. As other officers responded to the situation, a man came out, sat down a baby. Officers heroically went to rescue that baby. The suspect continued to shoot at them. Four more officers were hit by actual gunfire, making a total of five. Four other officers suffered shrapnel wounds in the gunfire. A total of six, I believe, went to the hospital. I am very happy to say, as of yesterday, all those officers have been released, and they will recover as far as continue to live their lives. But let's not forget, these are traumatic injuries. These are gunshot wounds that caused, and they were with a high-powered rifle. These are tremendous injuries that will take a lifelong recovery. We cannot just gloss over,
thank you.
Oh, they were shot, and now they're out of
fine.
The hospital.
Yeah.
Because we do that.
Yeah, we do.
Right? They,
yes.
Oh, they survived.
Yeah.
Don't worry about them.
Yeah.
No, worry
right.
about them and
you're
pray
right.
for them. In a further act of heroism, those same four officers that were injured stayed on the scene, provided additional support in bringing this dangerous situation to an end, which took several of hours. It appears that all nine injured officers will recover, and they were released from the hospital from their physical wounds received in the execution of their responsibility, but the road ahead will not be easy. We also offer our thoughts and prayers for others involved in this tragic incident. The original call was a woman who had been
yes.
shot. She was injured throughout this standoff.
Baby's
she
mom.
She tragically died. The suspect ended up losing his life as well. We're certainly not going to worry about that part of it. But two people were dead on this scene. And the injured among our staff include officers with as little as 2 years. And two seasoned officers, 20-year veterans, still on midnight patrol, a male and female officer, partners. And I just, that filled my heart with so much love to think, wow, they're still out doing it. Because I remember a couple of people when I was new in the late 90s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, you don't see that very often anymore. Nowadays, a squad of officers is, you're going to be lucky if the senior officer has 2 years on because of all the problems. We're going to. There were two officers.
And involved. Knowing one of the officers like you do, it makes total sense because they're there because they care about the streets. They care about
yes.
keeping people safe.
But these officers saved the baby, and they did bring the situation to a close without any further violence to any of the neighbors, any of the general public. And again, nine officers on one call shot or received shrapnel. That is record-setting, unprecedented. It's not a record that the city of Phoenix is going to want to be known for or be proud of, but it definitely goes to show you at any moment your life is going to change and you're going to go on a call that is going to turn into something just so tragic. So bless those officers. We pray for them. I'm glad they're out of the hospital, and may the physical, emotional, and mental recovery bring you Godspeed in all that. The inspirational close this week, this definitely follows along the lines, Darren, of what we've been talking about with media and politicians and the educators out there in our colleges, teaching just the ideology. This is a beautiful example of the difference, I think, between the people trying to just simply live a good life and they actually have common sense and intelligence, and they're not going to get caught up in the mob mentality or the stupid words of being triggered or shooked or anything else like that. This is a great story. The donkey told the tiger, "The grass is blue." The tiger replied, "No, the grass is green." The discussion became heated, and the two decided to submit the issue to arbitration, so they approached a lion. As they approached the lion on his throne, the donkey started screaming, "Your Highness, isn't it true that the grass is blue?" The lion replied, "If you believe it's true, the grass is blue." The donkey rushed forward and continued, "The tiger disagrees with me, contradicts me, he annoys me. Please punish him." The king then declared, "The tiger will be punished with 3 days of silence." The donkey jumped with joy and went on his way, content and repeating, "The grass is blue, the grass is blue." The tiger asked the lion, "Your Majesty, you've punished me. After all, the grass is green." The lion replied, "You've known and seen that the grass is green." The tiger asked, "So why do you punish me?" The lion replied, "This has nothing to do with the question of whether the grass is blue or green. The punishment is because it is degrading for a brave, intelligent creature like you to waste time arguing with an ass. And on top of that, you came and bothered me with that question just to validate something that you already knew was true. The biggest waste of time is arguing with the fool and fanatic who doesn't care about truth or reality, but only victory of his beliefs or illusions. Never waste your time on discussions that make no sense. There are people for all the evidence presented to them do not have the ability to understand others who are blinded by ego, hatred, and resentment." Does any more sentence right now sum up the political discourse in this country? Ego, hatred, and resentment. It is all that we see. The only thing they want is to be right, even if they aren't. When ignorance screams, intelligence simply moves on.
We don't listen. Turn off the TV.
God bless all of you. Be safe. We'll see you next week.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys. Heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide Networks and all mobile devices. Badge Boys.